All right, we are holding on set of K omid bays, four lines from the bottom. Continuing on the topic of Sancheiriv, the Pasuk says, so the Gemara is going to quote a Pasuk, but it starts off with a drush on it. Amar Rabba Bohu, Ilmole Mikra Kasu, if the following Pasuk hadn't been written, E Efshal Omroi, it would be impossible to say such a Pasuk, because you're going to have a Pasuk that's going to imply, as the Gemara is going to explain, that, so to speak, Hashem himself humiliated Sancheiriv, not just with by destroying his whole army, but by humiliating him on his actual body, burning his hair and his beard, as we're going to talk about in the Gemara. The pasuk says, "By Yoimahu, on that day, Yigalach Hashem b'sara schira, Hashem will shave with a schira razor." Mefoshim on the pasuk explain that schira means large, but here the Gemara is going to explain soon that it actually means hired, meloshen socher, meloshen a hired worker. Be'evrei Nahar, on the other side of the river, the Melech Asher, on the king of Asher, as Harosh, his head, the sar haraglayim, and the hair of his legs, the gamas hazokan tispe, and also the beard will be destroyed. So in simple pshat, Mefarshim explain on the pasuk that this is a metaphor that Hashem will completely destroy the power of Sancheiriv everywhere where he rules over. So it'll be like a person's hair and beard were destroyed, as if they were shaved off with a giant razor. But here the Gemara is going to understand that it means that literally Hashem shaved off his hair and burnt his beard. So what happened? So Rabba Bohu tells the story. Also, kutshebrichu v'idme like a gavra sova, and Hashem came and appeared to him as an old man. Now, what does that mean? Hashem himself is going to be in the form of a person. So the Yad Rama explains that even so, it still means that even though the Gemara is using the word kutshebrichu, it would mean a malach. We do find sometimes where malach can be called by the name of Hashem when he's completely identified. But this shlichus, Ben Yehoyada talks about over here, it can be a malach from Machne Shechina, from the Malachim who are really close to Hashem, and therefore they can be, so to speak, called by the name of Hashem. Anyway, so whatever this apparition, this Malach or whatever it is, comes v'idmi like a gavra sova, and he comes appearing to Sancheiriv like an old man. Omale, he says to him, now, when you're going to go to the kings of East and West, the old kings who were subordinate to you or who were allies of yours, you brought all their sons there, and now you cause them all to be killed. Because as we learned in the Gemara yesterday, they had 45,000 princes with them. Now, these are not all princes from Asher itself. These are from various other vassal and subordinate and allied nations who came along to join in the conquest. And now they've all been killed, thanks to you, because you brought them to Yerushalayim. My Amat Lahu, what are you going to say to these kings? They're going to be very angry at you that you caused their sons to die. Amalahu or Amalei. So Sancheiriv answers this old man, "How gavra pachta nami Yosef." That man, meaning myself, is sitting in that fear. Yeah, in other words, I am very fearful of that. What do you suggest? Amalei hechi neved. So he says, "What should I do?" Omale, so the Malach tells him, "Zilva shani nafshach, go disguise yourself, so they won't recognize you." So Sancheiriv asked, "My ishni, how should I alter my appearance?" Omale, so the Malach tells him, "Zil isili mispara maspara, go bring me a pair of scissors, the igziyachana, and I'll cut your hair, and that way they won't recognize you." So Sancheiriv asks, "Mehecha I see, where do I find the scissors?" Amalei, so the Malach tells him, "Ula ul lahu besa, go to this house," and he points him to a house. "I see, and you'll find over there a pair of scissors." Ozolashkechinu, so he goes and finds them, either meaning the scissors, or as the Gemara is going to say, also malachi sharis, other malachi sharis came. So ashkechinu malach. So the word asoy is in parenthesis over here. So either it's ozolashkechinu, he went and found the scissors, but before he could take them, malachim showed up, or also malachi sharis came when he came into the house before he even found the scissors. The idmu like a gavri, they also appeared in the form of people. So in other words, I guess we would understand, according to Ben Yehoyada, particularly, according to the Yad Raman, Ben Yehoyada, that was saying the first one was also a malach, we'd be saying the other one, the original one, who offers to cut his hair, is a very high-level malach, so high-level that he can be called by the name of Hashem, metaphorically, as opposed to these are lower-level malachim, so they're just called malachi asharis. So they were like, they appeared like people. They were taking date pits and grinding them in a mill. So Sancheirov says to them, Havuli Masmero, give me a pair of scissors. Omrulay, they told him, we're not just going to give it to you for free. Tchoin chad griva to kashyosa. First grind for us a saw of these pits. Vinitan loch, and then we'll give you the scissors. Tochan chad griva to kashyosa. Sure enough, he ground one saw of date pits. Via Havuli Masparta, and then they gave him the scissors. So far, this explains why it's called tar haschira. The word tar means a razor. Here, apparently, the Gemara is using it in the looser sense of scissors, and it's called haschira because, like, he had to hire himself out in order to get the scissors. He had to hire himself out to grind the date seeds. Ad'asa, by the time he came back with the scissors to the original malach, ichshech, it was late. It was dark already. So the Malach says to him, Zil Icy Nura, go get a fire. I can't cut your hair in the dark. Also the Icy Nura, so Sancheirov goes and gets fire. Bahadi to Kanofachle, as the Malach is blowing on the coal, on the fire, to make it bigger, to make more light, Itli be Nura Bedikne, the fire grabbed a hold of Sancheirov's beard and burnt it. Also, Gazul Reish Vidikne, and then the Malach went and shaved his hair, and Vidikne is also in parenthesis, because again, according to what we just said, his beard had actually been burnt off. So Omru, they said, Hainu Dichtiv Vagamas Hazakan Tispe, this explains the expression of the Pasuk, also the beard will be destroyed. Now, first it says Yigalach, he will shave, and then it says Tispe, so why a different expression for the beard? Because in this story, you have that the hair of his head was shaved with the scissors or razor, but the beard was burnt off instead, which the word Tispe suggests that. It suggests a complete destruction. Now, the Pasuk does also mention Sar Haraglayim, which literally means the hair of his legs, or his feet, or sometimes raglayim in that context can also mean the hair between the legs in the private area. Here the Gemara is not saying that the Malach did anything with that. Marashar explains in the drasha that we're saying over here, haraglayim is Malashan hergol, what he's used to. He's used to appearing in a certain way with hair and a beard, and now he's lacking both of those. So that was the story. So in other words, it would be hard to say that a malach, or even a malach, especially a malach that can be called by Hashem's name, goes and shaves at Sancheirov and burns his beard. Nevertheless, Rav Abahu says that's what the pasuk is implying what happened. Now, what's going on over here? There's a very interesting mimer from the Alter Rebbe. There's two different versions of the mimer. Later on, there's a mimer of the Tzemach Tzedek that expands on it much more. It begins by quoting this pasuk by Yemahu Yigalach Hashem. It's often called Drush Tar Has Schira, because the drasha that deals with this tar haschira of this gemara over here. The gist of the explanation is Sancheirov is a new kind of opponent of Hashem that you didn't really have before. Let's say, for example, Paroi. He said, "Mi Hashem? Who is Hashem that I should listen to him?" But that means, in other words, he acknowledges that Hashem exists. He's just saying, as the Goyim said in those days, "Elakod Elakai." Hashem is the God over gods. In other words, he's removed from any. They thought that he's removed from any involvement in the world. That he delegates things to the lower gods and whatnot. And that was, as the Rambam explains, that was the beginning of Avodah Zarah. In the first place, began with that idea. But at least they recognize the power of gods as they understood them, and they recognize that Hashem is above all of them. Sancheirov comes as a new thing. He's saying all the gods of the nations, none of them were able to withstand me. Hashem Lahavdil is not going to be able to withstand me. So he doesn't believe in godliness at all. As far as he's the first atheist in history. So that's a new kind of klippa. And he comes from, the Alter Rebbe goes on to explain, so he in fact comes from a new type of klippa that had not been seen in the world before. And he goes and explains in some detail that kind of thing comes from the concept of hair. You have Hashem himself is, so to speak, described as having white hair, and there's in some contexts black hair and red hair, so you have different kinds of hair representing different kind of tzimtzumim, and here you have a tzimtzum that led all the way down to an atheist like Sancheirov. So, by the way, I mean, you know, of course, you know, outwardly, he probably wasn't an atheist. Outwardly, he probably claimed to believe in his gods of Asherah and whatnot, but we're saying that deep down, he really didn't believe in any of them at all. So now, therefore, what Hashem has to deal with him then is to get rid of all this hair representing all this power that the klippa that nourishes him has that comes from those hairs of Hashem. So it's all cut off or burnt off, and Hashem himself, so to speak, is getting involved in doing it because he himself denied Elokus completely. Ben Yehoyada adds over here, by the way, I mean, so that explains the basic thing about Hashem shaving off his hair and burning his beard. What about all the other details about grinding the date pits and whatever? Ben Yehoyada explains, in other words, that it represented the point we're going to learn on Amud Beis. Sanchedev had great descendants. Shmai of Avtalion descended from him, meaning, in other words, that there is a certain Kedusha hidden within that within that very gross clipper of his, and that's represented by him grinding the date pits. So the Gemara says, "Omer Papa, Hainu da Amri Inchi." This is like the expression people say, "Gerute la'amo." If you shaved a goy, arma literally means a person from Aram, but more generally, the Gemara often uses it as a word for goyim. So if you shaved an Arami, a goy, shapurlay, and he was okay with it, and Maharshal explains gerute a little differently. If you poured really, really super hot water on his head, and he was okay with it. Itli le nura bedikne, go ahead and put a fire on his beard and burn his beard. You won't get enough laughter out of him. In other words, if he allows you to start playing practical jokes on him, basically, then go ahead and do all the practical jokes you want on him, and you'll get plenty of laughs out of it. So the same way over here, like Hashem is the Malach is shaving his hair and at the same time causing his beard to be burnt. So it bears out that expression. In other words, that sometimes you start up with a guy like that and you humiliate him in public and he doesn't protest. Then it means go ahead and keep humiliating him. He obviously doesn't mind, and you'll get lots of laughs out of it. The Gemara continues, Ozal, now that Sancheirev had gone through all of that, Ashkach dapa b'tei vusa de Noyach. He went and he found a beam from Noyach's teva. Omar, so he thinks to himself, Hainu alakor rabba, this must be the great God, the Shezve the Noyach b'teifana, that saved Noyach from the flood. And the goyim thinking in terms of, now again, you know, here on one hand we're saying he doesn't truly believe in any kind of God. Maybe after this incident with the hair, he started believing in one. In any case, the goyish mentality is that everything comes through gods. They don't have a concept of Hashem himself running the world directly. So in his way of thinking, then the teva that saved Noach must have been a god. So Omar he thinks to himself that I'm going to make this a new god of mine. I'm going to worship it. There is an explanation actually that Sancheirev thinks to himself that I'm a survivor of a lost world like Noach. You know, Noach lived in the world before the Mabel, and then he comes out and like it's a whole new world, the old one having been completely destroyed. So Sancheirev thinks of himself in the same way. Now that my whole army was destroyed, it's like I'm the only survivor, one of the only survivors of a lost world. So therefore, I'm in the same situation as Noach. So the God that helped him can also help me. He thinks to himself. So he starts worshiping it. He says, "I ozalahu gavro matlech." If that man, meaning I, goes and is successful to raise a new army, etc., makrav lahu latreind noi kamach, then I will offer my two sons as a korban before you. Shomu b'noi, his sons overheard that, and they didn't want that at all. The katluhu, and they killed him. Thus the pasuk says, as he was bowing in the temple of his god Nisroich, and we understand that Nisroich is related to the word Neser, which means a plank, a beam of wood. Then his sons Adramelach and Saretzah killed him with a sword. So that was why, because they didn't want to be brought as a korban to Avodah Zarah. He had a third son as well. The pasuk goes on to say that his son, it actually mentions these two sons ran away to the land of Araroth, which would be the same place where he got the beam from. So they ran away to there. Meanwhile, the pasuk says he had a third son named Esau Chador, and who became the next king. Now that we've talked about Malachim, of how they dealt with Sancheirev on a personal level and on a national level, and we talked about the giant army that came with Sancheirev and that originally came with Avraham Avinu, so now the Gemara digresses to talk about the war with Avraham Avinu against the four kings. The pasuk says, "The pasuk says, 'Vayicholik aleihem laila.'" Avram divided his forces against them by night, Hu va'avodav, he and his servants, vayakim, and he struck them and he fought against the four kings of Gomer and defeated them. Now, if the pasuk just means that they fought at night, then it would say something like vayicholik. Then the pasuk would put Lila someplace else in the pasuk. So then it would be, in other words, the simple meaning is, in other words, exactly that. Like you pursue an army, then you do it at night. But Maharsha points out, in that case, it should say vayicholik aleihem ba'layla. In the night, he divided his forces against them and then caught them in a pincer movement. So therefore, when it says Lila over here like this, then the Gemara is understanding that it means that Lila was involved in helping them. Lila is the name of a malach. So, Omer Rabbi Yechanan, Oisem Malach Shen is Damen Loi LaAvraham, that Malach who came and encountered Avraham and helped him, Lila Shmoi, that Malach is named Lila, Shenema V'Halayla Omer Hora Gover, as we find that when Eov starts his first speech complaining about why was I born and then have to suffer so many tzaras, so he says that I wish the day that I had been born was gone, V'Halayla Omer, and the Lila that said Hora Gover, a boy has been conceived, meaning, and the Gemara explains in Nida that means the Malach named Lila is the one who announces a child has been conceived, and then takes the fertilized drop and brings it before Hashem to determine what's going to be the whole life story of this baby. So we see that the Malach in charge of who deals with matters involving pregnancy and conception is called Lila. That same Malach came and helped Avram over here. What's the connection? So Maharsha explains that. How does Avram's tiny little force, especially according to the opinion that he only had with him Eliezer, how is he going to be able to defeat four mighty kings and their armies? And even if you say, according to Pshut HaShem Mikra, that he had 318 of his soldiers still. But we know that Avram and the Jewish people are beyond Teva. Well, the same way, Avram also naturally didn't have the ability to conceive children. And then Hashem gave him that. And then Hashem gave him that ability. So that's the connection. The same Malach who was in charge of conception, which Avraham wasn't able to do, b'derech hateva, at that point, that Malach also came and saved him now from the four kings and helped him defeat them. Also l'mayla b'derech hateva. Rabbi Yitzchak ben Napcha says a different point. Sha'osa ma'isa Lila. Hashem, it was at night, and Hashem fought on behalf of Avraham with the kind of thing that are done at night. Shenema, like we find by Sisera, min shamayim nochomu. They fought from the heavens. Hakechovim im siloisam. The stars in their courses, in their orbits. Nochomuim from their orbits. Nochomuim Sisera fought with Sisera. So the same idea. In other words, Maharsha goes on to explain that's the thing that it's also connected with the point before. We're saying that Avraham and the Jewish people are beyond Mazel. Therefore, the same way as the Mazolis, the constellations and the stars, fought on behalf of the Jewish people in the time of Sisera, the same way they fought on behalf of Avraham, demonstrating that he's beyond the normal thing where people's destinies are controlled by the stars. Here, on the contrary, Avraham has the stars under his control and they help him fight. So the Shlokish comments, he says, you have two explanations over here. You have Rabbi Yochanan's explanation that Lila refers to the Malach, and you have Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha's explanation about that it was the stars' fault. So the Shlokish says the Napcha's explanation is better than the Bar Napcha's. Rabbi Yochanan is called Bar Napcha either because his father was actually a smith or because it's a Loshen Sagi Noho. Rabbi Yochanan, the Gemara says, in various places was very, very handsome, so therefore he would be called Bar Napcha, the blacksmith's son, to avoid an ayin hara. So he's called Rabbi Yechanan Bar Napcha. Meanwhile, Rabbi Yitzchak himself is called Napcha. So Rabbi Shlokish is saying basically, I prefer Rabbi Yitzchak's explanation over Rabbi, that the stars fought on Avraham's behalf more than Rabbi Yechanan's explanation that it was the Malach called Lila. In this connection, speaking of that war of Avraham, the pasuk says by Yirdof ad Don, he chased them until dawn. Now, why only till dawn? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Even Shabbat Tzaddik at Dun, when that Tzaddik Avraham came to the place, which later on, now it wasn't called Dun yet at that time, it was called Laish or Leshem. The Gemara was calling it Dun because later on Shevet Dun conquered it and made it part of their Shevet's territory. Anyway, when he came to Dun, Toshash Koichai, his strength weakened. Ra bnei bonav shasidin lavet avodah zarah b'don, because he saw with Ruach HaKodesh that in the future his descendants will worship avodah zarah in Don. Shenema, as we say, by Yerovam and his Egle Azov, by Yosem as echad beveisel as echad nasan b'don. He placed one of them at each end of his territory, one in Beisel and one in Don. So therefore that weakened his strength when he realized that's going to happen. In fact, the Marashah explains the reason why the Gemara doubtions that is because the next pasuk says, because the previous pasuk rather says that Vayirdefem ad Choiva, it says he chased them until Choiva, which is to the left, meaning to the north of Damascus. So why over here does it say, so first it says Vayirdef ad Don, then it says they chased them till Choiva. So, okay, in the simple sense, you would mean he first chased them, the first burst was until dawn, and then he continued to chase them as far as Choiva. In the Medrash, actually, there's a point about it. One of the Chachamim says in the Medrash over there that Choiva is Meloshon Choiva, as in Meloshon guilt, the guilt of the Jewish people worshipping Avodah Zarah over there, and that is another name for dawn. And then one of the other Chachamim, Rabbi Yossi ben Damascus, says, I actually come from the area of Damascus, and I can tell, that's what Damascus means, his mother was from Damascus, and I can tell you there's an actual town in that area called Choiva. So all Gemara is going according to the first possibility, and therefore it's saying, because first the Pasuk says Ad Don, and then it says Ad Choiva, means it's the same thing, and it's called Don because of the Choiva, it's called Choiva because of the guilt that the Jewish people incurred by worshipping Avodah Zarah there. The Af Oisei Rosha, and also that Rosha, Nebuchadnezzar, Lonis Gabu, he didn't really get his full strength, Adshi Gila Don, until he reached Don for the same reason. Once he reached Don, where they worshipped Avodah Zarah previously, then that gave him extra strength to be able to go conquer Eretz Yisrael. Shenema, as we find in the Pasuk in Yirmiyah, Midon Nishma Nachra Susav, from Don we heard the snorting of his horses, meaning in other words, like his horses even are stronger and they're snorting with their energy that they're putting into their march at Don because of the Averis that had been done at Don. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to Now we're going to continue talking. Now we're going to be continuing talking about things involving Nebuchadnezzar. We're also going to talk about later on Tzaddikim who came from notorious Rishoyim, and therefore the Gemara gives the following piece as an introduction to that. So Omer Abzera, Afakav the Sholach Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda Minitzivin, or different gears of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, even though Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda sent a message from Nitzivin, on the side here it says that the gears should be that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi sent a message. First of all, he zaru bezokin sheshochach Talmudei Machmas Oinsai. Be careful with the honor of an elder Talmud Chacham who forgot his learning because of an oinus. Sometimes it happens, a person becomes old and he becomes forgetful. You have in the Gemara an example of that is Rabbi Yosef. So you have to be careful with his honor. Don't because he forgot the Torah because of oinus, then don't think less of him for that. It's one thing if he forgot it not by oinus, then like it says in Pirkei Avos, Mischai Benafshoi. But here, well, it was because of an oinus. Don't think less of him for that. Number two, and another point could be actually that he became sick. Another point could also be. Elsewhere, Rashi explains that also Machmas Oinsei could be, for example, he was so busy making Parnosa, he had nothing to live on, and therefore he has to spend his time making Parnosa, and therefore he forgot learning. Also, don't look down on him because of that. Anyway, so that's the first one. The second one is, and we see elsewhere, the Gemara explains, you see that even the Shivrei Luchas, the broken Luchas, were placed in the Arayin. So that was the first thing. The second thing he warned them, v'yizor b'veridin k'Rabbi Yehuda. Second of all, be careful to shech through the veridin, like Rabbi Yehuda says. When you shech the bird, it's a machloikas in chulin. Now, like this, we know when it comes to shechting an animal, you have to cut through the two major pipes, or at least more than halfway through the two major pipes in the neck, the windpipe and the esophagus. And with a bird, technically, you only need to do one. But Rabbi Yehuda says that with a bird, you also have to cut through the veridin, which are the blood, the major blood vessels over there, the arteries or the veins, as the case may be. The point is, the Gemara explains over there, Rabbi Yehuda points out, with birds, many times you roast them whole. So if you don't cut through the veridin, meshech them through, at least cut through them, then the blood is going to pool in them, and then you're going to have a problem of kashrus because of the blood. So he says that you have to be careful to cut them through, at least when it comes to shechting a bird. So now Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira or Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is sending to people, yes, be careful with that. When you're shechting a bird, make sure you cut the veridim as well. And the third thing, another warning he tells them, v'izaru b'bnei amei ha'aretz, shemehen teitze Torah. Be careful with the honor of children of amei ha'aretz, who themselves become tamei chachamim, and make sure to honor those children, because Torah will come out to the world from them. In other words, even though Amei Ha'aretz themselves are very low down, but their children were able to become Tamei Chachamim, make sure you respect those children for that, and don't think less of them because they don't think less of them because their parents were Amei Ha'aretz. The Be'er Sheva explains differently. He says that that what it means is be careful. Be careful to teach them Torah so that they can become Tamei Chachamim, but also inform them of what we're going to continue saying in the Gemara, that when a person does a mitzvah, even a tiny mitzvah, he gets a big reward for it. And this way also they should learn from that, that they shouldn't just think, okay, we're going to learn Torah, that's enough. They should realize they have to put in a lot of effort, and they're going to get great schar from Hashem for that. So they need that encouragement more than regular people, because since their parents were Amei Ha'aretz, then they need that extra encouragement to realize the great schar that a person gets even for a small mitzvah. Okay. So anyway, even though that last point, ki hom milsam de'in and lahu, we have to inform them the following point. These Tamar Chachamim, who are the children of Amei Ha'aretz, we have to inform them of the following fact that the Gemara is going to go on to explain after it gets through the whole story, that Nebuchadnezzar showed a tiny amount of honor to Hashem, and for that he got tremendous reward. The same way we tell these Bnei Amei Ha'aretz, you know why you have the schus of being Tamar Chachamim? Your parents must have had some little amount of S'chus. Don't think it's all on your own. Realize that, don't look down on your parents who were Amei Ha'aretz. Realize that they must have had some kind of S'chus that makes it possible for you to learn Torah and become Tamei Chachamim. That's one explanation. Rashi brings another explanation that what it means is, We're going to learn later on that there were Tamei Chachamim who came from Sancheiriv and from other notorious Rishoyim, as we're going to learn on Amud Beis. So now we're telling them, now when we're honoring you, it's not because of your fathers, because they were Amei Ha'aretz, we're honoring you because of your own Torah. This way they won't become proud and think that their ancestor was with Tzaddikim. That's Rashi's second explanation. And again, the Be'er Sheva, following his Svara before, explains that that what we're telling them is when we're telling them that we're honoring you as Tamei Chachamim, we also have to tell them that we also have to tell them this point, that Nebuchadnezzar got a huge reward for a tiny little mitzvah that he did. The same way we're encouraging you to keep on doing mitzvahs, and you'll get tremendous reward from Hashem. So what is the teaching that we teach them? You have like this. A pasuk in Yirmiyah says, Yirmiyah says to Hashem, Tzadik ato Hashem ki orev elecha. I know that you, Hashem, are a tzadik when I'm going to argue with you, meaning I'm going to argue with you about the following point, but I recognize in advance, don't think that I'm denying, don't think that I'm questioning Hashem's justice or whatever. I just want to understand. Ach mishpotim adaber oisach, but I want to speak fairly and argue with you so you can explain me your ways. This is going to ask the famous question of Rosh HaVetovloi. Why is it that we have notorious Rishoyim who seem to have it very good in the world? We know that Moshe Rabbeinu asked Hashem about it. So now Yirmiyah is doing the same thing. Madua derech Rishoyim Salecha. Why is the way of Rishoyim so often successful? Sholu, why are they at peace? Called Bogde Boged, all the disloyal, all the treacherous and traitorous people sometimes seem to be very successful and peaceful. He continues, Netatum, you planted them, Gamshe Roshu, and they struck roots, and they're well rooted in the ground. Yelchu, they go and they continue to develop. Gam also peri, they even produce fruit. So in other words, he's saying, why is it that the Rishoyim, so many times they seem to be so successful? They're so successful in this world, and they even produce fruit, and they're going on and on. Everything seems to be very successful in what comes from them. So he's saying, Hashem, I understand you know what's going on, but can you explain it in a way that we human beings can understand as well? Which you have many places in Tanakh. Again, you have Moshe Rabbeinu asked Hashem about it. You have the whole Sefer Iyov is built on this concept. Kapitel Ayin Gimel and Tilim, among others, deals with this whole question. There's a lot of places. Anyway, so, my Ahad Rulei, what was the answer in Min HaShemayim? With a couple of psukim later, Hashem tells him, Kiyas Raglayim Ratzta, now you've run with your feet, Vayal Ucha, and they tired you out, Ve'ech Tesachres Asusim, how do you think you're going to be able to compete with the horses, which are much faster, over Eretz Sholem Atabateach, you're at peace, you're comfortable and at peace in a land of peace, but how would you fare in the floodplain of the Yarden, where it's a muddy place and much harder to run? So what does that mean? Hashem is answering him, Moshal Adam Sha'omar, imagine you have a person says, Ani Yocholorit Sholosh Parsois, I can run three parsa, lifnei asusim, and I can even overtake horses running. Ubein bitzei amayim, and I can do it even in a swampy area where it's hard to run. Nizam le ragli achad, along comes one foot runner, rots the fun of Shlosha Midlin Biyabasha. And this person, the one who is boasting, runs in front of him 3 milim on dry land, vanilla, and he got tired out from the 3 mil run. Omrulois, the people who heard him boasting before, said, Umma lefne ragli kach, madach, you got tired running and keeping ahead of a human runner, lefne asusim, alachas kama kama, how much more so if you try to outrun horses, you're not going to be able to make it. Umma shloshes milim kach, madach, you did it only 3 mil and it tired you out, sholosh parsois, and 3 parsa, which is 4 times as much. Alachas kama vakama, you won't be able to do it. Umma b'yaboshakach, and if you had such a hard time of it on dry land, ben bitzei amayim, alachas kama vakama, how much more so in the swampy areas? So in other words, so that's that the meaning of the pasuk when Hashem tells him, how would you compete with the horses and how would you compete in the swampy areas of the floodplain of the Yarden? So this is like in this mashal over here. The three parasa doesn't mention in the mashal. Marashah points out, since we're going to have in a few lines, the Gemara is going to tell us about 3 or 4 steps that Nebuchadnezzar took. So therefore, in keeping with that, the Gemara used the metaphor of 3 mil versus 3 parasa. Anyway, so after the same way, Hashem tells Yirmiyah, you're wondering why it is tzaddik, why it is Rishoyim are so successful. For the reward for 4 steps that I paid back, that I rewarded that Russian Nebuchadnezzar, who at one point ran because of my honor, as the Gemara will tell the story soon, after Temea, and you're wondering about the tremendous schar that he received, that now he's the now he's the ruler of a great empire. When I now reward Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, who ran before me tirelessly like horses, how much greater the reward they're going to get, so much that you're going to be astonished about how much it is. Why the comparison to horses? Now, horses do, of course, run very fast. Ben Yehoyada points out, you know, a lot of times in Tanakh and in Gemara, we often talk about, when we want to talk about somebody running really fast, we use a metaphor of a deer. Why Dafka over here a horse? He says, because one thing is a horse never really sleeps. We find in the Gemara, in a number of places, a horse sleeps for 60 breaths at a time, and then you wake up. This is where we get the concept of shikin nishmi, that when if you sleep more than that, then you wash negelvasser. So, and David HaMelech, it says, would sleep like that. So therefore, it represents that that Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov never slept 24-7. They're devoted to Hashem. So that's Hashem is explaining to Yirmiyah, you see the tremendous reward that even Rishoyim get for a tiny mitzvah, the same way how much more so that the tzaddikim, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and their descendants are going to get an enormous reward for their schosim. So therefore, that helps you understand a little bit why it is Rishoyim are successful, because the tzaddikim will be so much more successful, much, 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 much greater amounts. So again, now the point is, we tell this to the children of the Amei Haaretz to encourage them, again, according to one explanation of Rashi, that they shouldn't think that their ancestors were such great tzaddikim. They should realize our ancestors were Amei Haaretz, but they had one mitzvah that Hashem is rewarding them for. Or, according to the Be'er Sheva, the vert is that this way it encourages them to continue doing mitzvahs and continue becoming good Erlich Yidin, realizing the reward that Hashem has in store for them. So, v'hainu dechtiv, thus the pasuk says, la nevi'im, Yirmiyah says in a different place regarding the Nevi'im, Nishbar libi bekirbi, my heart is broken within me, Rochafu kolatz moisai, all my bones are trembling, Hoyisi ki ish shikar, I was like a drunken man, or Hogever avora yoyin, like a person who was overcome by wine, Mipnei Hashem, because of Hashem, Mipnei divrei kodshei, and because of his holy words. So la Nevi'im, Rashi explains, the Nevi'im we're talking about over here are of Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. So now Yirmiyah is saying, when I consider how great the reward is that Hashem has in store for them, where we're saying, you compare with one tiny mitzvah that Nebuchadnezzar did, and for that he has a great empire, when you imagine, by comparison, the enormous amount of mitzvahs that Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov did, and therefore the tremendous amount of reward that's waiting for them and their descendants, that it made me tremble that I can't even begin to understand it. That's how Rashi explains. Marsha points out that actually, if you look in the Pasuk over there, La Nevi'im is actually referring to false Nevi'im. So he explains you have false Nevi'im at that time who are saying, don't worry, Nebuchadnezzar's power is soon going to be broken. We learned in the previous parak about Hanani ben Azar, for example, and it's all going to be over. And Yumi is saying, no, I'm trembling in fear from what Hashem is telling me, that because of the one tiny mitzvah did that Nebuchadnezzar did, therefore he gets all of this empire, that I realize those Nevi'im are speaking falsely and they're deluding the Jewish people, and I'm afraid of the consequences. So the Gemara says, "I would see us Maihi." What's the story with the four steps? Dichtiv, you have like this. After Sancheiriv's army was destroyed, and after Chizkiyahu recovered from his illness, the pasuk says, "Ba'esah he shalach Merodach Baladon ben Baladon Melech Bavel Sfarim v'Gomer." At that time, Merodach Baladon, the son of Baladon, the king of Bavel, sent letters and presents to Chizkiyahu. So what's the connection? Because Chizkiyahu had been sick, therefore Merodach Baladon is sending him letters and presents? What's going on? Now, there is an explanation that's brought in a medrash that was the first time in history that anybody had ever been dangerously ill and recovered from it. So in that case, it was a chiddush, and therefore Merodach Baladon wants to find out what's going on over here. But here the Gemara is taking a different view of the matter. So the Gemara says, "Ain, yes, that's what it is." So you have like this. If you look in a different pasuk in Divrei Hayomim, where it describes the story, it says that the king of Bavel had sent Lidrash HaMoifis Asher Hoya Ba'aretz to find out about the nest, about the moifis that had happened in the land. What happened? The Amar Rabbi Yechonon, Oysa Hayom Shemes by Ochaz, on the day many years earlier when Ochaz, Chizkiyahu's father, had died, and he was a Rosha, Shtei Shoyas Hoya, that day was only 2 hours long. So in other words, Hashem made the sun set extra early so they wouldn't have time for a nice Levaya and a Spadim and so forth. It was part of his Kapora, as we learned earlier in the Masechta. In fact, Chizkiyahu degraded Ochaz's body and had it dragged around the city on a bed of ropes in order that he should get his kapara for being a Rosha, and that everybody should learn not to act like him in the future. So also part of it was there might have been other people who wanted to make a hesped and a dignified burial. Sasha made the sun set quickly so they wouldn't have the time for that. Marsha points out that also the result of that is it means there was no Avelus Minatoda about him. Minatoda, you have Avelus only on the day when the person died, and until he's buried. So here, on that day ended so early, so there was no real time for Avelos for him. Everything else, the Avelos after that, of the remaining 7 days, is only Dirabbanan, so therefore that was also part of his Kapara. Anyway, so now, when Chizkiyahu was sick and then recovered, then Hashem restored him those 10 hours. So now that day was 10 extra hours long. As the pasuk says, Hashem tells Chizkiyah through Yeshaya, "Hinini meishiv tzel hamalos asher yorda b'malos ochaz, b'hinini meishiv tzel hamalos." Behold, I will turn back the shadow of the degrees of the steps asher yorda, which it had gone down, b'malos ochaz, and the degrees or the steps of ochaz, v'shemesh and the sun achiranis, backwards eser malos, 10 steps or 10 degrees. Meaning, in Pushat Pshat, it means that ochaz had set up like a sundial or something like that to tell the time, and now Hashem is telling him, you're going to see that the shadow is going to go backwards on that sundial 10 degrees, meaning 10 hours. But here the Gemara is dashing that and it's set 10 hours early, years earlier, because of Ochaz, and now those 10 hours that were lost because of Ochaz are now going to be restored, and the sun's movement is going to be turned backwards, and there's going to be 10 extra hours in the day. So now this was a tremendous moifus, a tremendous nest, and now Merodach Baladon wants to find out more about it. In fact, actually, Rashi brings on the psukim over there from a different medrash, that Merodach Baladon wakes up. Now, usually kings in those days would wake up very late in the day, but not so late like this. He slept because he had the extra 10 hours. Then he wakes up. What time is it? Would you guys leave, let me sleep for 24 hours straight? And they tell him, no, it's the sun was turned backwards. Well, who could do such a thing? Chizkiyahu's God. Well, then in that case, he's impressed enough to send a message to Chizkiyah and find out what happened. So Omalahu Maihai, so Merodach Baladon asked the servants, what happened over here? Omrele Chizkiyahu Cholash Veitbach. So they told him Chizkiyahu was sick and recovered. And this nest went along with it. Omar, so Merodach Baladon says to himself, Ika Gavriti Hai, Vlabinala Shadurale Shlama. How could there be? There's such a person in the world, and I shouldn't send him a message of peace. In other words, I want to get to know such a person who had such a tremendous nest happen for him. So they wrote out a letter addressed to Chizkiyahu that went as follows. The salutation began. Shlom le Malka Chizkiyah, peace to King Chizkiyah. Shlom le Kauta de Yerushalayim, peace to the city of Yerushalayim. Shlom le Koraba, peace to the great God. And that was the text of the salutation. Now, what happened was, Nebuchadnezzar Safre de Baladon Hava. Nebuchadnezzar at that time was serving as Merodach Baladon's secretary. At that time, when they were composing this letter, he wasn't there. He also, when he came back and found out what they had written, he found out what happened, that they had written this letter. So he asked them, what did you write? And they quoted to him the Lashon that they said. Amalahu, Nebuchadnezzar says, wait a minute, Krusulei alakor Rabba, you're calling him the great God, and you're writing his name at the end after Chizkiyah and after Yerushalayim. It's not respectful. This is how you should write it. Shlom alakor Rabba, shlom lakauti Yerushalayim, shlom lamalka Chizkiyah. You should address the great God, the great Jewish God, first before Chizkiyah and the city. Omri lay, so they said to him, as the famous expression goes, Kraina de Igerta, the one who reads the letter, Iulehavi Pravanka, let him be the messenger. In other words, you're the one who's saying we should rewrite it, then fine, you go and catch up to the mailman and have him and then bring him back so we can rewrite the letter. Rohat Basre, so he started running after him. Kidur Rohit, Arab Psius, but after we had run four steps, and the shliach is so far away, also Gavrio va'oikme, then Gavrio came and put the shliach in front of him. So this way he doesn't have to run any further. Yad Ramah explains differently. Va'oikme is actually referring to Nebuchadnezzar, that the malach stopped him from going any further so that he doesn't get more schus for his steps. As it is, he has tremendous schus for the four steps that he ran. Now the point is, in other words, so again, he ran four steps in honor of Hashem, and therefore he got this tremendous empire. So therefore Hashem is telling Yirmiyahu, understand from that the tremendous reward that's waiting for the tzaddikim. In other places, by the way, it's brought, it wasn't four steps, but rather three. And in fact, it's brought, Marsha brings over here and in Yuma, and Morgan Avram brings in, and it's brought La Halacha. This is why after we take the three steps back in Shemana Esrei, then we say, Yehiratzen Malafanecha, Hashem Elokeinu, Elokeinu Niseinu, Sheyibonim Besmichta, Shemeherev Yameinu. We're saying, Nebuchadnezzar took three steps in your honor, Hashem, and for that he was able to destroy the Besmichtash. We're taking three steps at the end of Shemana Esrei, and we're pleading with you, Hashem, to rebuild the Besmichtash. So that's the connection. And the Gemara says, in fact, if Gavriel had not come and stopped Nebuchadnezzar at that point, or so, either by bringing the shliach to him or by stopping him, whatever, there would have been no remedy for the enemies of the Jewish people, meaning the Jewish people themselves, because he would have had such great schos that he might have been able to do even more damage than he did. Interesting, Ben Yehoyada makes an interesting point in some detail over here. So what was the argument basically between Nebuchadnezzar and the other secretaries? It came down to like this. Now in those times, again, they didn't have a concept that Hashem directly rules the world. Their idea was that Hashem rules through Malachim. So now he's thinking to himself, through Malachim and through the heavenly bodies and whatnot. So now what happens is, when he finds that this great ness happened to Chizkiyahu, that the sun was turned backwards because of him, then he thinks to himself, in that case, that means Chizkiyahu is more powerful than the sun. So why am I bowing to the sun, for example, and asking the sun to be my intermediary with Hashem? Instead, let me pray to Chizkiyahu and ask him to be my intermediary between me and Hashem. Therefore, he addresses Chizkiyahu first in his letter. But Nebuchadnezzar tells them, is that really right? Maybe after all, if you're calling him a Kol Rabba, the great God, that means you understand that he has direct control over things in the world. So then you should address him first. So they weren't sure of what to do, which is why they told Nebuchadnezzar, you go take care of the matter. So again, the point is, in other words, that he ran in honor of Hashem to uphold the honor of Hashem, to say that Hashem really runs the world directly. See? Okay, the Gemara says, "My Baladon ben Baladon." Now he's called Merodach Baladon ben Baladon. So why does he have such a name? Usually, a person doesn't have his father's name as part of his own name. So the Gemara answers like this: Amri. They explain like this: Baladon Malkahava. The first Baladon was the king. The Ichdine Ape Vahava Ki Dekalba. But his face changed and became like the face of a dog. So nobody wants him as king anymore. Who wants a king who looks like a dog? So they deposed him. Have a Yosef Brei Amalchusa, so his son took over the kingship. Now the son's name is Meroidach, but he have a ksiv. But when he would write his name, have a ksiv Shmei Ushmei Da'avua Baladon Malka. He would write his own name and the name of his father, King Baladon. So he wouldn't just write Meroidach Ben Baladon, which is the normal thing to write. You usually write your name and your father's name. He added the name Baladon to his own name to say, in other words, I'm not ashamed of him, even though now he looks like a dog. I consider it's not just that I'm his son, which fine, I took over from him, but in other words, like as if like he's still king now. Meroidach Baladon, as though like I've almost like a dual king. Of myself, Meroidach, and my father, Baladon, and in fact, I am the son of Baladon. So this way he's showing honor to his father. So you may be embarrassed of him the way he looks, but I'm not embarrassed of him at all, and I'm proud to consider myself just as his Mamala Mokum. So the Gemara says, Hainu Dichtiv. Thus the Pasuk says, later on, the Novi Malachi says to the Jewish people, Bein Yechabed Av, a son honors his father, the Eved Adonav, and a slave honors his master. And the point is, Hashem says, so why don't you show me, Hashem, respect, where I'm your father and I'm your master? So in other words, the point is, the fact that he says, Bein Yechabed Av, we're meant to understand, it's not just a general thing, yes, sons honor their fathers. It sounds like the Novi is referring to a specific son where we see that he had tremendous covered for his father. So who is that example? So Ben Yechabed of Hadamor, and we just said that Meroidach Baladon had such covered for his father that he took his father's name as part of his own to show how proud he is to be his father's son. The Eved Adonav, where's the example of a slave, a servant who shows tremendous honor to his master? That we have with the Nebuchadnezzar and Nebuzaradan. So before we learned that Nebuchadnezzar and Nebuzaradan were two of the survivors of Sanhedrin's giant army. Now, 100 years later, Nebuchadnezzar is the king of Babel and Nebuzaradan is his top general. And we see that Nebuzaradan had tremendous derech eretz for Nebuchadnezzar. Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, "Ovachodesh hachamishi ba'osu lachodesh," in the fifth month in Av, on the 10th of the month, the Beis Hamikdash was actually destroyed on the 9th, but the Gemara mentions elsewhere that it was set on fire on the 9th and continued to burn throughout the 10th, which is why the Pasuk here refers to the 10th. Anyway, it was the 19th year of Nebuchadnezzar's kingship. Nebuzaradan, the chief butcher, the chief executioner, came. Omad lifnei melech bavel b'Yerushalayim. He stood in front of the king of Bavel in Yerushalayim. Vayistrif es beis Hashem ves beis HaMelech. And he burnt the house of Hashem, the Beis Hamikdash, and the king's palace. Now, so you're saying that Nebuzaradan appeared in Yerushalayim in front of Nebuchadnezzar. What do you mean in front of Nebuchadnezzar? Umi solik Nebuchadnezzar the Yerushalayim. Did Nebuchadnezzar himself ever come to Yerushalayim, or at least by this battle? V'haksiv, the Pasuk says, when they captured Sidkiyahu, the last king of Yehuda, the Pasuk says, V'yalu oisel melech bavo rivlosa. They brought him up to the king of Bavel to Rivla. Where is Rivla? V'amar Rabbah is the Antuchia. Rivla is later known as Antuchia, which is outside Eretz Yisrael. Antuchia is nowadays it's a little village in southern Turkey called Antakya. Back then it was the capital of Syria. It was a very important city, but in any case, it's very far from Eretz Yisrael. So clearly, the point is, Nebuchadnezzar made his headquarters there, and they had to bring Sidkiyo to him over there because he's not in Yerushalayim. So what do you mean that Nebuchadnezzar stood in front of Nebuchadnezzar? So Rav Chista and Rav Yitzchak bar Avadimi, argue what the Pasuk means. Chad Omer, Dmus Diyokne Hoshachukka Le'amer Kavdoi. One says that he had an image of Nebuchadnezzar engraved on his chariot. So now, every time he stands in front of that picture of Nebuchadnezzar, he has such a derech eretz, such a pachad for Nebuchadnezzar, that it's as if he was standing in front of him. So therefore, the Pasuk can speak of him standing in front of Nebuchadnezzar, meaning in front of Nebuchadnezzar's image engraved on his chariot, for which that itself was enough to give him a lot of derech eretz for him. V'chadoma, the other one says he didn't even need that. Eimer Yaseira, Hoyselem Yemenu, he had such a great fear of him, the Doimek Misha Omen Lefonov, that it seemed to him, he felt constantly as though he's in Nebuchadnezzar's presence. I once heard an explanation many years ago that this is a, you know, we have like this, many people have all in their houses and in different places, they have a picture of the Rebbe. So that whether you need that or not would reflect these two opinions over here. One opinion is you need a picture in order to help develop a certain derech eretz for a person. So therefore, it helps to have a picture of the Rebbe to help develop that hiskashrus to the Rebbe. The other way of looking at it is the second possibility, you shouldn't even need that. You shouldn't even need a picture, just to, you know, you can develop your hiskashrus without one. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to continue talking about the rest of this Amud, is going to talk about things involving the Churban. We have the famous Agadah about the Churban and Gittin, which actually we're currently doing now in Ein Yaakov, and here we have another piece of Agadah about the Churban here in Sanhedrin, this Amud. It's, by the way, for the same reason, the same way as you're allowed to learn the one in Gittin on Tisha B'Av, you're allowed to learn this one on Tisha B'Av as well. So the Gemara tells, Amud Rava, there was a load of 300 mules of Narga, the parizel, the shalot, the parizel of axes of iron that could dominate, meaning could cut through iron, so extra strong iron or steel. So he had, and he had 300, mule loads worth of them. 300, okay, a lot of times the Gemara means it's just a very large number. But anyway, Shadrle Nebuchadnezzar and Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar sent along that huge number of axes with Nebuchadnezzar to break through the gates of Yerushalayim and conquer the city. Kulu blatinu chad dosha de Yerushalayim, and all of them were swallowed up and were destroyed on one gate of Yerushalayim. And he tries one axe and slams it against the gate. And instead of here, this is supposed to be extra strong steel that should break through the iron of the gate. Instead, the axe broke. And he tried the next one, same thing. And they're trying over and over, and every axe is breaking against the gates. Shenema, as the pasuk says, pitucheha yochad. Capital Ayin Dalet of Tilim is all about the Churban. Maskel Osef, Lomel Elikim, Zanachta Lanetzach, and he describes the scene of the Churban. Pitucheho Yochad, it's gates together. Bechasho Vechelapas, Yahloimun, they're banging against it, and they're banging and smashing against it with Kashil and Kelapas, which are various kinds of weapons. So Rashi explains, in other words, that on one gate, all the Kashilim and all the Kelapas are hammering against it and nothing doing. They're not getting through. Marsha actually doesn't like that explanation because he says, first of all, the Gemara then in that case is Daushin and the Pesukim out of order. And second of all, Pitucheha suggests many gates. So he flips around. You have a few lines later, the Gemara brings another pasuk from that same capital of the previous pasuk. Yivoda kamevi lamoila, may it be known as he brings it above. Bisvach eitz kardumos, tangled up. The axes get tangled up in the wood. So Marashah says that belongs over here. This is the Gemara means to dash in that pasuk over here. Like all the axes are getting tangled up in the, even though the gates are only wood. Nevertheless, the wood is withstanding these mighty axes, and over the axes are breaking. In any case, Boilam Madar, so Nebuchadnezzar is about to give up. Omar, he realizes that this is obviously supernatural. Mr. Pina, the Lelev Ruby, Kiyuhechidil Ovdu Sancheiriv. I'm afraid I'm going to be treated the same way as Sancheiriv was. One day I'm going to wake up and my whole army is going to be destroyed. Nafka Kola of Omar, but a Basco came out and called out, Shavar Bar Shavar, Jumper, the son of a jumper, meaning you originally were one of the ones who jumped originally to join Sancheiriv's army and to rush to Yerushalayim, as we learned about yesterday. You're a descendant of people who do that as well. Nevuzaradan, Shavar, Nevuzaradan, jump, it's time to jump. The Mota Zimna, now has come the time to Mikdash Achariv, that the Mikdash is going to be destroyed, the Heichel Mikli, and that the Heichel is going to be burned. In other words, you don't be worried. You're worried because that happened to Sancheiriv back in the day, but then the Jewish people had Schosim, like we learned yesterday, and therefore Hashem destroyed the army of Sancheiriv to save them, but now they don't have those Schosim, and now it's time for the Mikdash to be destroyed, so don't give up, the Baskel is telling him. At that point, he had one of these axes left. He started again with hundreds of mule loads of these axes, and you can imagine each mule could probably hold several dozen of them, and he had gone through all of them. Now he has only one left. He went and hit the gate with the blunt end of the axe. That's how Rashi explains kupa, means the blunt end. The Yad Rama says it doesn't even mean that. It means the handle. Like he wanted to see, is it truly min hashamayim that I'll be able to conquer? And then in that case, even the wooden handle of the axe will be able to break through the gate. And sure enough, the iftach and the gate opened. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Yivoda will be known, kimevi lamoila, as he brings it up above, with the wood tangled up in the axes. In other words, the Paitan, the composer of that Kapitel Tehillim, Asaph, is saying, Hashem, may you consider it, this, that he took these axes and used them to break through the wood and break through Yerushalayim, as if he hurled it against the Kisei HaKavod, and punish him for it. In other words, Hashem had told him at the time, this is what you should do. But nevertheless, he's not doing it only because Hashem said so. He's doing it for his own selfish reasons. So Hashem, you remember that and punish him as though he had attacked Kisei HaKavod itself. Again, Maharsha flips this around with the other pasuk. Now it's carvings, and then the one gate over there, out of all the axes and all the everything that he had left, kelapas, he explains, can mean the blunt end, like Rashi says, Yahaloimun, they hammer against it, and sure enough, it breaks open. So the Gemara continues, have a cult over Ozel. So now Nebuzaradan is going and rampaging through Yerushalayim and killing as he goes, ad mata lahechel, until he came to the hechel, ad lekbein nura, and he started to set the hechel on fire. Gova hechel, at that point, the hechel lifted itself off the ground. It doesn't want to be destroyed by this rosha. Dorchu beimin shmaya, Hashem, so to speak, stepped on it and forced it back down to earth. Shenemar, as the pasuk says in Eicha, Gas Dorach Hashem Levsulas Bas Yehuda. Hashem has trodden, Hashem has stepped on the virgin daughter of Yehuda, the unconquered daughter of Yehuda, like a wine press. So we see that Hashem, so to speak, stepped on it and forced it back down to the ground. One point is that this was all Hashem orchestrated, this all milamayla, to show Nebuzaradan that he's not the actual conqueror; that it's Hashem who's making it happen. So, still, have a kozicha daite. Still, Nebuzaradan was feeling very proud of himself. Look what I accomplished over here. Nafka baskola v'omrele, but a basko came out and announced to him, Amaktila katalta, all you killed is a nation that's already been killed. Meaning it was min hashamayim already that they should be killed, and all you did is you carried out what was already taking place. It already happened beruchnius. Now all you're doing is you're accomplishing it begashmius as well. Hechla kalya kalis, a hechel that was already beruchnius burnt. You've burnt begashmius. Kimcha tchina, flour that was already ground up, tchinas, is what you've ground. In other words, don't think you accomplished anything. Everything that you accomplished was done milamaila. It was already nigza milamaila, and all you did is you were like the garzin biyad achotziv. You were like the axe that actually is used for the tool for it. But don't think you were don't be so proud of yourself for doing it. You didn't accomplish anything that Hashem hadn't already decided is going to happen. Why the metaphor of ground flour? Shenema, we actually find the nevuah in context. This pasuk is talking about how Bavel is going to be punished, but now they were doubtioning it as what they had done to the Jewish people, what the Jewish people are going to endure from Bavel. And the pasuk says, take millstones, the tachani komach, and grind flour. Now, what do you mean grind flour? Flour is already ground, so it means, in other words, as if like the flour is already in ground, and all you're doing is grinding, is seemingly grinding it again. And the pasuk continues, galit samosich, uncover your braids, chespi shovel, uncover your also means your braids. Rashi explains, samosich, Rashi explains, is where it's attached to the head. Shovel would mean the actual braids themselves. Gali shoik, uncover your leg, ivri naharis, and cross the rivers. In other words, Hashem is saying you're going to go into golos, so you're going to be like a disheveled woman walking into Golos with her hair loose and unbraided and her legs bare and so forth, and that's how you're going to be going into Golos. But the point is, in other words, that the metaphor that the pasuk uses is grind flour, as if to say the flour has already been ground, and now your enemy, Bavel, is pretending as though he ground it himself. The Gemara continues, Chaza Dome Deschaya to have a Karosach. In the Bis Mikdash, in the Azara, Nevuzaradan sees the blood of Zechariah that was bubbling and boiling. This was Zechariah ben Yehoyada, who had been killed in the Bis Mikdash over 200 years earlier, and still his blood was still on the ground there and still bubbling and boiling in anger over what the Jewish people had done to him. He was a Navi, again, from 200 odd years earlier. He had warned the Jewish people, if you worship Avodah Zarah, then Hashem is going to punish you. And they stoned him in the Bis Mikdash. And now, and all that time later, the blood is still there. Elsewhere, the Medrash mentions that there were actually seven Averis that they did all at once over there. It was Shabbos, it was Yom Kippur, he was a Navi, he was a Kohen Gadol, it was in the Beis Hamikdash, etc. So it was a horrible Avera. So now, even all that after all that time, the blood is still there. Omlehu mai hai. So Nebuzaradan asks the Jews who are there, what is this blood? Omrelei, so first they tried to bluff. It's blood of Korbanos that's spilled on the ground, and it's bubbling because it's angry at the fact that it didn't get to be poured on the Mizbeach like it's supposed to. So he says, I see the Enasi. Okay, I'm going to try it. I'm going to bring and try it. Imadamu, whether it looks the same. Kasi, so he shechted animals over there. Veloyadamu, and it didn't look the same. Animal blood looks different than human blood. Omalahu, so he tells them, Galuli, you better tell me the truth. The Eloi, and if not, Sriknu Lahul of Saraichu, from a Srik of the Parazala, I'm gonna torture you, I'm gonna comb your flesh with iron combs. Omrulai, so they told him, Hai Koin Vinovihu, this was a Koin and a Novi, the Inabilahu, the Israel, the Churban of Yerushalayim, that he had said many years ago, Navua, to the Jewish people about the Churban of Yerushalayim, the Katluhu, and they killed him for that, and that's the blood over here. So Nebuzaradan says, "Anoma fayastale." Okay, all this time he's been unappeased of his murder. Now I'm going to appease him. I see that Bonan Kotilalve, he brought to Menachachamim and killed them over the blood. Vloinoch, and still the blood was still didn't rest. I see Dardike de Beirav, he took young children from Cheder, Kotilalve, and killed them. Vloinoch, and still the blood didn't rest. I see Pirchikone, he brought young Koinim, Kotilalve, and killed them over him. Vloinoch, and it still didn't rest. In the end, he ended up killing 940,000 people over there, and still it didn't rest. And it still didn't rest. At this point, Nebuzaradan goes over to the pool of blood over there. Omar, he says, Zacharia, Zacharia, Tovim Shebehemni Badim. I've already destroyed the best among the Jewish people. Do you want me to kill all of them before you're going to be appeased? Miyad Noch. And then at that point, the blood stopped moving and bubbling. Hear her tshuva b'dayte. So at this point, Nebuzaradan starts thinking thoughts of tshuva in his mind. Omar, he thinks to himself, Mahim shle ibdu ala nefesh achas, madach, they killed only one soul, kach, and for this they were punished so severely. Ahu gavra, that man, meaning myself, ma tevi ale, what's going to be with me that I killed so many people? Orak, he ran away, shodr putisila base, he sent a tsava, a will, to his house, what they should do with his property, v'isgayer, and he became a ger. Who would accept such a person as a ger is a very good question. I guess maybe we can imagine that he ran away to a place where nobody knew where he was, and therefore they were guy him. Listen, you know, as far as we know, he's a goy. We don't know his whole past history. I don't know whether if they'd known what his past history, whether they would have accepted him as a ger, but in the end, yeah. By the way, it is brought. There's a very famous thing that Eber once brought in a sicha, a story involving the Alter Rebbe, that in his time there was a fellow who was suffering from a dibuk, from a neshama that had gotten attached to his and was causing him to go crazy, and the Alter Rebbe goes in and talks with it, and then the neshama explains to him that he was the neshama of one of the people who had been one of the ones who killed Zachariah back in the day, and now over and over he's being this galgal in the world. So what happens though, the Alter Rebbe brings a limud schus on him. Zachariah was about to say in Nevuah that the Beis Hamikdash is going to be destroyed. Now when a Nevuah is said, that makes it much stronger. So therefore, so they wanted to prevent Zachariah from actually saying that nevuah, so the Beis Hamikdash shouldn't be destroyed. They did it in the wrong way, of course, but still, there's a certain limud schus on them, and that allowed that dibuk to leave the person, and for the person to for that neshama to get its tikkun. Now that the Alter Rebbe was malamud schus on it, this was in connection with the famous sicha about Miriam Bas Bilga, where the Rebbe had defended Miriam Bas Bilga at the end of Sukkah over there, and people were complaining, how do you defend such a notorious Roshanta? And the Alter Rebbe brought this that story, and then our Rebbe brought that story to illustrate that yes, you do sometimes stand up for and a malamed schus even on notorious Rishoyim from among the Jewish people. So, since we're mentioning that Nebuzaradan became a ger, so the Gemara continues in this vein. Tana Rabbanan, Naaman ger toshev hoya. Naaman, the general from Aram, who you haven't say from Elohim, the whole story where he was a mitzora, and he goes to Elisha, and Elisha tells him to dip seven times in the Yarden, so he became afterwards a ger toshev. He didn't become a yid, but he accepted on himself to no longer worship Avodah Zarah and to keep the other Shev mitzvahs b'nei noach. Earlier in the Masechta, we learned that he tells Elisha, when I go with my master, the king of Aram, to the temple of Rimon over there, I'm going to have to bow because I'm there with him, and Hashem should forgive me for it. And Elisha tells him, fine, go ahead, because a goy is not mitzvah al kiddush Hashem. If he's forced to violate one of his mitzvahs, he's not required to go on mesiras nefesh like a yid is. Anyway, so he became a ger toshav. Nuvuzaradan ger tzedek haya. On the other hand, Nuvuzaradan, as we just said, became a ger tzedek. Here was other examples of notorious Rishoyim who Tzadikim came from them. Mibnei Bonav Shal Sisra Limdu Torah B'Yerushalayim. Descendants of Sisra taught Torah in Yerushalayim. Reb Nissim Goin has a girsa over here that the Gemara identifies, namely that is Reb Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is a descendant of Sisra. It's brought in very that Amami Fano brings, the Gemara mentions in some other places that Sisra had relations with Yoel. Before Yoel killed him, she seduced him so that he'd become weak. So now that Amami Fano brings from that came the ancestor of Rabbi Akiva. Anyway, Mibnei Bonav Shal Sancheirav Lindu Torah Barabim, descendants of Sancheirav taught Torah in public, or Manninu Shmayav Avtalyan. Shmayav and Avtalyan were descended from Sancheirav. The Rambam says they themselves were Geirim, in fact. So, and then they became the highest Tzaddikim and the highest Tamar Chachamim of the Jewish people in their time. Mibnei Bonav Shal Haman Lindu Torah B'Bnei Brak, descendants of Haman taught Torah in B'Nei Brak. Elsewhere it's brought, there are Rishonim, we have the Girsa, not B'Bnei Brak, but rather of Shmuel Bar Shilas. There was one of the Amoroim named Shmuel Bar Shilas, who was mentioned in a number of places in Shas, that the Gemara is saying he was a descendant of Haman. Interesting point, because they discuss the question, the Mechilta says you're not allowed to accept Gerim from Amalek, and Haman, of course, is from Amalek. So there's a lot of different answers. Among them, maybe in fact the halacha is not like that mechilta. Maybe it's only when it's ben achaben, and here it was, and here it was a female. He was a descendant in the female line from Haman, and there's a number of different answers how such a thing could work. Anyway. In fact, Hashem also had plans that the descendants of that Rosha, Nebuchadnezzar, should also come under the wings of the Shechina. In other words, that Nebuchadnezzar should have descendants who will become Gerim as well. Omru Malachi Ashoris, the Fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but the Malachi Ashoris argued to Hashem, Ribbono Shel Olam, Mi Shehechrev Es Beischa, the one who destroyed your house, V'sodaf Es Hecholacha, and burnt your Hechol, Tachnis Kacha Tachas Kanfei Hashchina, you want to bring descendants of his under the wings of the Shechina. In other words, there's no good in him at all. Mela with Sisera and Sancheirev and whatever, there was a little good in them. One interesting explanation is because even though each of them was a tremendous Rosha in his time, nevertheless a certain Kiddush Hashem came about through him. Nebuchadnezzar did not. He burnt the Hechel and destroyed it. Through him, the Beis Mikdash was burnt and destroyed. And therefore, that means there was no good in him at all, and there was no Kiddush Hashem ever even made through him. We learned a few blocks ago, for example, we learned when Hanani, Mishael, Azariah were thrown into the fire, then we learned the fire burnt several of the nations that were around there. If it had burnt Nebuchadnezzar himself, then that would mean at least the Kiddush Hashem would have been made through him, and therefore he would deserve that he would have descendants who were Gerim. But in the end, Hashem accepted the argument of Malachi Ashoris and spared Nebuchadnezzar from it, and that way that means, in other words, there's no Kiddush Hashem was made directly through him, and therefore he doesn't have descendants who are Gerim. Thus the Pasuk says, Repinuas Bava Volonir Pasa. We tried to heal Bava, but she couldn't be healed. Meaning Hashem is saying, I tried to heal Bava, that from Nebuchadnezzar should come good descendants, but it wasn't healed because the Malach HaShoras argued against it, and Hashem accepted that argument. Ula Omar, Ula says a different explanation of this Repinuas Bava. So first, this refers to Nebuchadnezzar that we just said, that Hashem tried to heal him, that from him should come good descendants, and it didn't happen. Rabbi Shmuel Menachmeni Omer Elu Naris Bavel. Rabbi Shmuel Menachmeni gives a different explanation. It refers to the rivers of Bavel, which are permanently bitter. They explain that means specifically there's an area in Bavel where there's bitter water and there's palm trees that grow there. Usually palm trees grow by sweet water, but here you have a particular place in Bavel where the water there is bitter and the palms that grow from it, they are also bitter. And so the Pasuk is saying, like, we tried to heal it, that kind of thing you would think should be able to be healed, but nevertheless it can't, it's permanently bitter. Marsha also connects it with the Al Naris Bavel that we have in Tilim, where they sat by those rivers and cried over the destruction of the Mishmekdash. That's connected with this bitter river in Bavel. Continuing on the topic of the Churban, the Gemara says, Oma Ola, Ammon and Moab were the bad neighbors of Yerushalayim. What did they do? When they heard the Nevi'im, Yirmiyah and other Nevi'im of that time, Yechezkel, Tzfanya, who was saying Nevuah about the destruction of Yerushalayim, Shochel and Nebuchadnezzar, Puk v'tah. So they sent a message to Nebuchadnezzar, come, leave your country and come to Eretz Yisrael and do what the Jewish Nevi'im are saying. Omar, but Nebuchadnezzar says, Mr. Pina, I'm afraid. I'm afraid that I'm going to be treated like my predecessors. Again, I could end up like Sancheiriv with my whole army destroyed by Hashem. Shochulei, they answered him back with an expression from the Gemara paraphrases their answer with a pasuk from Mishlei. The context of this pasuk is talking about an isha zayna who is trying to convince an unsuspecting young man to be mezana with her. So she uses the expression. So now they're using it about the Jewish people, who, as the Nevi'im, we have, Marshall points out, we have many Nevi'im of that time who were comparing the Jewish people to an unfaithful wife. So therefore, they use the same pasuk. So the pasuk says, "Ki eino ish bevesoi." The man is not at home. Holach b'derach meirochik. He went on a far journey. So in other words, they're saying Hashem's shechina is not there anymore. Ve'in ish ala kadosh baruch hu. The word ish refers to Hashem. Shenema Hashem ish milchama. Hashem is a man of war. So they're telling him, in other words, Hashem is not present there. Shalach lehu. So he sends back to them. Fine, but he may not be in the Beis Hamikdash right now. But bekrivahu, at least he's close. Hashem is always close to listen to the tefillos of the Jewish people. Va'asi, so he can come very quickly and punish me. Shochule, they answered him with the continuation of the pasuk. Holach b'derech meirochuk. He went on a faraway journey. In other words, he's nowhere nearby at this point. He's not at all receptive to the tefillos of the Jewish people. Shalach lehu. He sends them back a message, Islahu Tzaddiki, but I know the Jewish people have among them Tzaddikim, Debo Rachmi, who are going to daven for Rachmanus on the behalf of the Jewish people, Umay Sulei, and therefore they'll bring the Shechina back, and then my army will be wiped out. Shochulei, they answered him with the next pasuk in Mishlei, Tzrur HaKesef Lokach B'yodei, he took the bundle of silver in his hand. In simple pshat, in other words, this is the woman is telling this guy, don't worry, my husband's on a way on a long business trip. He took a big bundle of money. He's going to be gone for a while. But here they're saying, Ve'en kesef al tzaddikim, the word silver refers to tzaddikim. Shenema, as we find a pasuk elsewhere in Hosea, Vo'ekreholi, Hashem says, metaphorically about the Jewish people, I acquired her for myself, Bachamisha osa kosef, with 15 silver coins, V'choymer sa'odim, V'leisach sa'odim, and a choymer and a lesach of barley. Elsewhere, the Gemara explains that it means the 15 refers to the 15th of Nisan, on which Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. The kesef refers to in the schus of the tzaddikim. And the choymer and the lesach of barley refers to 45 tzaddikim that you find in every generation. The point is that we see that kesef refers to the tzaddikim, and we have kesef also means desire and yearning, which is what tzaddikim have for Hashem. So they're saying he took the bundle of silver with him, meaning in other words, there are no tzaddikim left. Shalach lehu, Nebuchadnezzar sends back to them, Hadu Yashi b'tshuva. Okay, but the Rishoyim are going to do tshuva, or Bo Rachmi, and then they'll daven for Nachmanos, or Maisulei, and then they'll bring back Hashem to protect them. Shochulei, they answered him back, no, Kva Kova Lahen Zman. Hashem has already established a set time during which, even if they do tshuva, the Golos is still going to happen for this many years. Shenemar, as they continue with the expression in the pasuk from Mishlei, L'yoyma Kese Yovei Beisei, on the appointed day, he will come to his house. So in other words, they said, Hashem has sent Nevuas that there's going to be 70 years of Golos above all, and therefore, before the 70 years are up, even if they do tshuva, the Golos is not going to be shortened. The enkese el azman, the word kese refers to an appointed time, shenema ba kese l'yom chagenu, on the appointed time of our Yom Tov. So in other words, they're trying to convince him, they're telling him, don't worry, you have nothing that's gonna prevent you. Shalach lehu. So now he sends them, okay, on a practical, fine, now we've dealt with all the ruchniistic aspects that you've told me that I don't have to worry about. What about the practical gashmiistic aspects? Sitvahu, it's the winter time now. Remember, the siege of Yerushalayim began on a Sotah B'Tevis, which is in the middle of the winter. So it's the winter. V'lematzina d'osi. I can't come in during this season. Mitaugo mimitra, because of the snow and because of the rain. And my army can't move under such conditions. Shochulei, they answered him back, To Ashina Datura, you can come by going along the mountaintops, and that will protect you from the worst of the weather. Shenema, as we find a pasuk, Hashem talks about the punishment of Moav, that Moav is going to be punished and defeated and destroyed. It starts off, Shilchu Kar, send a fast messenger, Moshel Eretz, to the ruler of the earth, meaning the Nebuchadnezzar, who ruled over, who was the superpower, Misela Midbara, from the rocks in the mountain, Al Harbas Tzion, to the mountain of the daughter of Tzion, meaning this is that Hashem is saying Moav is going to be punished for the fact that they sent this fast runner to Moshel Eretz to tell him, come Misela Midbara. Come by way of the rocks and the midbar. Shalachlo, he sends them back. Iyasina, sure, but if I come to besiege Yerushalayim, I won't have a place for my entire army to camp, to bivouac over there. There's no place to hide out a whole army over there. Shochule, they sent him back a message. Kivris shalahem, meulin mipalterin shalach. You should know their graves that around Yerushalayim are better quality than your palace. So you can clear out the graves there, the caves where people have burials, and you'll use that to house your army. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, ba'isahi nu'um Hashem. The Navi says, at that time, says Hashem, Yetzius Atzmas Malcha Yehuda, they will take out the bones of the kings of Yehuda, Ves Atzmas Sodom, and the bones of their ministers, Ves Atzmas HaKoyanim, Ves Atzmas HaNaviim, and the bones of the Koyanim who worshipped Avodah Zarah, that is, or the Koyanim of Avodah Zarah itself, or the Koyanim of Hashem who worshipped Avodah Zarah, whatever, Ves Atzmas HaNaviim, and the bones of the Naviim, the false Naviim, Ves Atzmas Yoshvi Yishaloyim, and the bones of the other inhabitants of Yishalayim, the Kivrehem, will be taken out of their graves, Ushtochem, and they'll spread them out, in front of the sun and the moon, and in front of all the host of heaven, where when these people have been alive, they loved them, and they worshiped them, and they followed them. So in other words, when was this done? When were all these graves emptied out? Is when Nebuchadnezzar and his army came there, and they needed the space for themselves to again, Sancheiriv had come during the spring. They don't need anything more than tents. But Nebuchadnezzar is coming in the winter. They need protection from the elements. So now, therefore, they cleared out the graves, and that's what the Navi is saying is going to happen. So therefore, so with all of that, Nebuchadnezzar was convinced, and sure enough, he came and began the siege of Yerushalayim on Asar HaBetavis. But now we're saying Ammon and Moav bear the guilt for that, because if it hadn't been for all of them trying to convince Nebuchadnezzar and telling him that everything is safe and you can come and etc., then he might never have come to destroy Yerushalayim in the first place. So therefore, they're the ones who bear the blame for it. Okay.